Okay.
Yeah. STI. How to change your heart. Never been into the title thing, cause I figured that the next step was buy a ring. Never thought I'd be saying, girl, this is not a fling, or be trying to sing, but shorty, you're my girl, just in case you had a doubt.
Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me, it won't do no good to call the police. Always come late, if they come at all. Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me, it won't do no good to call the police. Always come late, if they come at all. And when they arrive, they say they can't interfere with domestic affairs between a man and his wife. And as they walk out the door, the tears well up in her eyes. Last night I heard the screaming, then a silence that chilled my soul. Prayed that I was dreaming when I saw the ambulance in the road. And the policeman said, I'm here to keep the peace. Will the crowd disperse? I think we all could use some sleep. Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me, it won't do no good to call the police. Always come late, if they come at all.
Tracy Chapman. All right.
That's great.
Dope song, dope song. In a bad way. Well, welcome to the Emotion Picture Show, like 97. You know, all that stuff like that. October 11th, I am Victorious, the brother Victorious, DJ Victorious. And who are you guys? Who's that female voice right here?
That is your co-host,
woman.
Jasmine, the lady of the show.
What's up, Jazz?
Hey. Who else do we have
my
on
name
here?
Is, the Shasta Nila, they call me the present. Once in a while.
All right.
And, yeah.
All right. Dope. Well, let's get right into it. This being what the president has proclaimed yet again, Domestic Violence Awareness Month, we decided to do a show on that topic. We actually did a domestic violence show. It was in March or February. April. It was April, matter of fact,
mm-hmm.
April 23rd. And I missed most of that show, so I'm glad to be part of it this time. We thought that we'd do things a bit differently. You know, we definitely spent a couple hours in April speaking on more common forms of domestic violence, which is, you know, the model of man beating on a woman or verbally abusing a woman. So today we want to do things a bit different. We still want to touch on that, but we do want to bring other side to that, which is when women are the aggressor, dealing with domestic violence and a legal standpoint. And we have a couple of guests, you know, who are brave souls. They'll be sharing their stories with us. And we also have Michelle Williams, who is a family law attorney. And we have our good old friend Valerie, you know, who's a therapist, who joined us the first time. Yeah. But before we dig in, Jazz, do you have any intro words?
I do. I'm really happy that we are acknowledging Domestic Violence Month. Of course, you know, I was thrilled that we had the show months ago because we wanted to bring awareness at a time that we felt it was important to our listeners. And, again, that show we could have went on, you know, for another hour or more. So I think it's important that we're doing this again. I just want to make some general safe environment housekeeping rules for those of you that are listening or in the chat room or logged in online. If you would like to call in and you would like to call in, you know, and share your story and be anonymous, that we are doing that this evening. Via the chat room, we'll be sharing some information, some resources for those of you that would like more information about domestic violence, how you can help yourself or help someone else. And because of the sensitive nature of this topic, the Emotion Picture staff will make ourselves available, of course, following the show and any medium that you can contact us if you would like to be put in contact with some assistance or resources in your local area. So without further ado,
yeah,
we can go ahead and get started, gentlemen.
All right. Well, on the line we have Mike. And Mike's going to tell us a story of experiences in his past and how he's taken responsibility and how he's grown from it and what advice he can offer people dealing with the same situation. Mike, are you there?
Yes. How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Mike? Mike, you are, and, you know, we're applauding Mike. Because Mike is definitely a brave soul. It takes a man to stand up and tell any story, you know, let alone this one. Mike, what you got?
Okay. Well, I just want to say, you know, part of the reason why I'm saying something is because I don't want to, I want to show both sides. I know that, you know, a lot of times when things like this happen, it's, you know, the guy doesn't want to take responsibility. You know, people say that it's a woman's fault because she did X, Y, she did Z or whatever. And I just want to say what happened and then just briefly let you know, like, I didn't grow up in a household where this was a commonplace, and that was something else I wanted to make sure that your listeners knew. A lot of times you could, you know, it's like a family disease, and, you know, sometimes it's like, they'll say, oh, my father used to hit my mother, and that's why I did that. That's not what I saw. That wasn't a reality for me. And what happened was I was getting high, and in getting high, and I was dealing with someone who was unfaithful. And, you know, and what happened in the short version is instead of just leaving her, I hit her. You know, and wanting to, you know, correct the behavior and, like, and say, oh, you know, you shouldn't do that, or, you know, in the craziness, and nothing, you know, nothing really came out of it but a lot of craziness. So, you know, and not to say that it was all my fault, one, for getting her, but two, that I picked her, you know what I'm saying? And three, is because I ended up, no matter what she did, and I want to make that 100%, like, it really wasn't about what she did more than it was about what I did. You know what I'm saying? Because it don't matter what she does. As long as she don't, you know, hit you, then you have no right to hit her. You know, in hindsight, I know, like, what I should have did was just, you know, just left her. But I didn't. And, you know, in my craziness, I wanted to fix her, and I wanted to say, you know, this ain't right, and if you do it again, and, you know, all the craziness that goes along with, you know, trying to, it was a crazy relationship, and crazy things were going on, and that was the end result. And not to say that it was okay, not that it was justified, you know, it is what it is. And it was now, and what I want to make sure that is known now, that I'm actually married, and that's not even an issue. It has never been an issue. I've been with her almost 5 years, and something like that never happened. I was married before that relationship, and that never happened. So, you know, just to say that you know, just in case you, the young ladies are with somebody and he says, well, I never did it before, you know what I'm saying? You know, anything is possible. It doesn't have to be, you know, something that you practice. You know, sometimes things happen, you know. The best thing that happened between me and that young lady is that we're not together anymore. And, you know, I learned not to do that. And that's basically what I wanted to say, you know what I'm saying? It's certain measures that you have to take as a man and, you know, make sure that the ladies know that's not acceptable no matter what excuse. And for the men as well, if you're getting hit, you know, I know we're trying to, you know, show both sides. If a man is getting hit, it's not okay no matter just because she's a woman, just because, you know, you were wrong. It's, you know, it's never okay for you to put your hands on somebody else. And that's basically what I wanted to say.
Okay. Mike, let me ask you, how long were you with this woman before you started to take it physically?
Put my hands on her.
Yeah, be
hands. Yeah, put my hands on her. I mean, we got to say what it is, right?
Right.
I mean, I knew her for a long time, and, you know, I basically try to make the side girl my main girl.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I knew her for a long time before it happened. But we was actually in I thought a monogamous relationship. Maybe 2 years before it happened.
Okay. And how long did it last?
Well, it didn't last long because I didn't you know, we didn't stay together long.
Mm.
So, I mean, it happened a few times, to be perfectly honest. Maybe about three times. It wasn't like it was a one-shot deal either. Maybe about three times.
Okay. Was it her first time being hit by men?
Well, you know what? I don't want to sound mean. I really didn't ask her.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like that. And she didn't volunteer any information, you know.
Right.
Basically, when it happened, you know, try to act like it didn't happen.
Right.
That kind of shit, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, that definitely wasn't, you know, in the right state of mind to be in the question and answer kind of thing. You know what I mean? It was like, whatever. I was so angry, like, you know, whatever. And we were going back and forth. We were getting together. We'd have a big fight. Get back together, make up, then it should have happened again. And we, by the third time, it was like, all right, you know, I guess, you know, this is not a good thing. Well, it wasn't like, I don't want to, you know, minimize it. See, that's the whole thing. I don't want to minimize what was happening because it was happening. But it wasn't like I was duffing her out or anything like that, you know what I'm saying? I smacked her a few times, and I pulled the hair. I drug her through the house one time. That was, like, the bad one.
Did she ever strike you back?
Yeah, you know, she defended herself. Okay. She defended herself.
Jess, are you there, Jess?
Yeah, I'm here. You know, it's... I have obviously bittersweet feelings hearing Mike share his experience, but I think it's very powerful to hear your experience because most of the time, you know, the person that is the aggressor no longer has their voice once they commit what many consider, you know, the ultimate act of disrespect in a relationship. Then your voice is silent. So I'm glad that on this show and that you chose on this show as well to share your experience and also for your personal growth to recognize that relationship wasn't healthy for you. It wasn't healthy for the woman that you were with and to move forward and, you know, as you've mentioned, to have a healthy relationship with your wife. So I definitely commend you for that.
No, I feel bad, to be perfectly honest. I don't mean to cut you off, Jasmine, but right now I'm feeling bad, you know what I'm saying? Because I know, like, you know, we're starting off the show with, like, you know, I'm going to be the villain. But, you know, my thing is that it's about taking responsibility, you know,
exactly.
and creating, and hopefully, like, creating a forum where people feel comfortable you know, just being who they are. And sometimes in life, you know what I'm saying, it is what it is. It ain't always pretty. And, you know what I'm saying, I'm sure we've all done things that we're not proud of, you know what I'm saying? And this is just, this is like, you know what I mean? Like the thing that I did, you know what I'm saying? That's like really fucked up. And now it's like, you know, nothing you could do about it. And, you know what I'm saying, why not just talk about it? And then, you know, hopefully people can move forward. I know the young lady, you know, she moved forward. She, you know, engaged and has a baby. You know what I'm saying? So I know she was able to move forward. So.
Well, how long has it been, Mike, since you dealt with this woman?
Well, I 2004.
Okay, it's been a while.
Yeah, 2004.
Mike, I do have something to say. I'm wondering, or I have a question to ask you. I'm wondering how, you know, for those people that are listening in or will listen, or those of us that, you know someone who abuses their significant other or spouse, you know, for you, what was that point that you acknowledged that this, you know, was not going to work? Did someone approach you? Did, you know, something just click like this cannot go on any longer? Were the police involved? Like, what was that point that, you know, you chose to end the relationship? Or was it that she ended the relationship?
Well, that was a really good question. It was a few things, because I knew it was wrong. You know, I'm going to tell you something. And, you know, being when you're high, I don't know about anybody else whoever uses, or whatever.
You mentioned being high. Like, were you high on weed? Were you smoking crack? Like, when you say you were high.
No crack. Well, I was smoking marijuana and sniffing cocaine.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? On a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, sniffing coke goes hand to hand.
Excuse me?
Mm-hmm.
No, I think it seems like, you know, it goes
hand in hand sometimes.
Sniffing coke and marijuana?
No, sniffing coke and you know, domestic violence.
Oh,
yeah,
well,
substances definitely increase the chances for domestic violence. So,
okay.
Any kind of violence.
I mean, I don't know, but I tell you, it wasn't the police that got involved. It was like in a few moments of clarity when you're looking around, you're like, yo, what the fuck am I doing? Excuse my language. Like, what am I doing? You know, look what's going on. I mean, I was living a life where if somebody was telling me their story, I would have been like, yo, just leave her. You know what I'm saying? You know, like you have friends that you call and they, yo, this is what's going on. Well, I used to be that friend that people would call and be like, yo, this is what's happening. Like, yo, man, leave that chick. I mean, nothing. The first time I thought she was cheating on me or talking to other dudes, I should have just left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I was caught up in the vortex, and I was caught up in, you know, in that thing. It was all the crazy behavior, the sex, the drugs. It was, you know what I'm saying? It was all wrapped up in the madness. And so, like, in the moment of clarity, I'm like, what? You know, like, I would leave and then, you know, get high and call her and be like, yo, I love you. You know, the craziness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the craziness. And then one day, the last time when I drug her, I drug her through the house, and I wanted to hit, like, you know, get, like, punch her. I was so mad, and I hit my alarm clock, right, in my mother's house, in my old room. And it's a lot of information, but anyhow, and I cut open my hand, right? I cut open my hand, and I had, like, you know, like you can see, like, the white part of my hand.
Mm-hmm.
It was bleeding, and you can see, like, the white part of my, on the inside of the flesh. Like, it was nasty. And I wrapped my hand up, and I just left the house, right? I just walked out, and I left it there. And blood on the floor of my mother's house, you know, because of my hand bleeding, and that was it. And I was like, yo, this is crazy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what am I doing? What am I doing with her? What am I doing to myself, to her?
Did you Did you feel during the course of this time that you were with this woman that there was, like for women, or not even for women, for people that are being abused, we know for the most part that there are systems out there to help, you know, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later in the show, that there are, you know, resources where you can walk in someplace and say, you know, I'm being abused. But did you feel like there was someone that you can talk to, or is that stigma, you know, I want to hear from you, like, is the stigma very attached, you know, in terms of you feeling embarrassed, or there was nowhere that you can go and get help, or was that even a thought that, you know, I need to talk this out, I need to process this, or even now, like, what do I do to make sure that I'm never taken to the point of rage again where I hurt someone else?
I think you hit a bottom. I think there's a lot of times you hit a bottom. Like, I have, you know, I have a lot of people, you know, fortunately I have, like, good people in my life. And, to be perfectly honest, I don't know if more than one or two people knew what was happening. Okay. There was definitely a lot of embarrassment. I don't even think I could fix my mouth to tell somebody what I did. To be perfectly honest with you, Jasmine, I don't remember, you know, saying, oh, you know, I have this burden. I think I told, like, maybe one or two people, like, yo, this is what happened, you know what I'm saying? And but never about me getting help, because it was all tied into the other problem,
mm-hmm.
which was, you know, the drugs. It all went hand in hand. So, I mean, once I took care of that problem, the other thing just fell into place. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, once I stopped getting high, everything else stopped. You know what I mean? I don't know if that answers the question.
No, that actually makes a lot of sense. And just kind of bringing us back to some of the things we discussed on our previous show, that, you know, a lot of domestic violence issues, have to do with substance abuse. And, you know, substance abuse is usually related to some other, you know, unresolved issue, addiction, a host of different things, mental health issues. There's a lot of things that are tied into why people abuse substances, and then, you know, it leads to other irrational behavior. So I think, you know, and then you also talked a little bit about how, you know, it would be an isolated incident, and then you guys would take a little time away, and then, you know, you would call her with, I'm sure, I'm sorry and I love you, and then kind of start the cycle over again, which is a hallmark, you know, cycle of domestic violence, where, you know, you kind of think it's behind you, and then those, you know, feelings and that behavior starts to surge again. So I think this is a very good example for our listeners and for us to hear from your perspective, because it really does validate that experience of what both sides go through. So, again, I am very, very appreciative to have you call in this evening.
Yes, we're very appreciative. And Mike, if you would just like to stay on the line, maybe some of the callers can find some peace through asking you questions. Are you available for that?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Yes, thank you, Mike. Yeah.
Oh,
and that was Mike. Yeah, that was Mike. You know, and I'm glad that we're able to give, you know, Mike a voice. It sounded like it was the first time Mike actually spoke about, you know, these things. So, you know, it's definitely good to, you know, get him out, hear yourself talking about it. He brought up some interesting things. You know, we usually say that if there's a cycle of violence, you know, we say, okay, well, maybe this person saw their father hitting their mother, or maybe they grew up abused, but Mike said that wasn't the case at all. So it's, you know, pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike also said it's kind of like a dark cloud, though. He was like, well, basically, just because a guy never did it before doesn't mean, you know, it's not going to happen, which is true. Just true. Sometimes there's a first time for, you know, everything. But, yeah, we have... ringing my bell all out. Well, we have a caller. Your air code is 330. You're on.
Hey, what's going on? This is G Huff. Shy, what up? Shy Stimuli, what up? It's Huff, man.
What up, man? What's good with you?
Nothing much, man. Man, I actually talked about this with Shy in the past, man, and it's a serious topic to me because I actually had a friend who was murdered due to domestic violence. Actually, somewhat of a relative. My my best friend's cousin, she was only 17, and you know, she was murdered by her boyfriend due to domestic violence. And it's just, I think the thing about her story is that these things happen every day to where, you know, it gets overlooked, but we don't really realize that, you know, it's not just happening to, you know, people our age. It's happening as young as 17, 16, 15. You know, like she was 17 years old and she was in an abusive relationship and nobody knew about it. And nobody knew about it until, you know, the day that she died. She had friends that knew about it, but no family members or anybody like that knew about it until she turned up dead. And, you know, she was, I guess, you know, started over something as simple as, I don't know, I guess a Facebook beef or something like that. I don't know. But, you know, just minutes before she was murdered, she updated her Facebook relationship status from in a relationship to single. You know, within minutes, she was found dead in her home, babysitting a 4-year-old. Mm-hmm. So.
They caught the kid?
Was he caught?
Yeah, that's my question.
Yeah. They caught him. They caught him. But, you know, my best friend, you know, this is his first cousin. You know, I'm 27 years old. You know, me and him, we've been friends since for about 20 years. You know, in 20 years, I've never seen my friend cry until that day. You know, so, I mean, if you're near a computer, if you get a chance, like, please look up the Tracy Banks story. Just Google Tracy Banks. You spell it TRACEEBANKS. Just Google Tracy Banks. I'm from Youngstown. This happened in Youngstown, Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah, please look up her story, man, and see how sad it is and see how real it is because it's happening, you know.
How long ago was this?
This was about a year ago. A year and a half ago. It was recent. Yeah, it was about a year ago. Yeah, so
when
happened.
Something like that happens, you know, Youngstown, you know, I know it's a major city, but relatively, you know, small place to live. Such a tragic story. How did you see at all? Did it affect the city? Like, did you see? Did you see? Male female relations getting better or change anything?
Well, I mean, more than anything, I saw how it affected, you know, my friend and the people that cared about her. As far as the city, I mean, Youngstown is. If you don't know about Youngstown, Youngstown is the murder capital of the world. So it's stuff like that happening here. It was like one of those here today, gone tomorrow type of stories just because it's Youngstown. But just as far as the family, I saw how it affected the family, and I still don't think they bounced back from it.
Okay.
You know? So, I mean, it's hard, man. And, you know, I have multiple friends that have been abused, you know, been in abusive relationships. I actually have a friend who she has a nonprofit organization that's geared towards helping victims of domestic violence. And she herself was abused, and that was the whole reason why she started the foundation.
Okay.
But, yeah, man, domestic violence is real, man. It's happening every day. You know, there's no age limit, you know, and it's not just, you know, not all the time. It's not always a man beating a woman. Sometimes it's a woman beating a man. You know, sometimes it's, you know, people beating up elderly people. I mean, it's real.
Yeah, we actually are expecting a guest to call. He was
in an abusive relationship. He actually was the victim. Hopefully, you know, he does still call up. Well, thank you, Huff, for
calling.
No
problem, man. No problem.
Stay tuned.
No problem.
Next week. Tell a friend.
Well, I most definitely will, man. Thank you guys for, you know, shedding light on this subject. I think it's something that people are afraid to talk about, but it doesn't get better unless you talk about it openly.
Right.
That is very true. I wanted to mention, as you were talking, I asked one of our guest therapists, Valerie Dallas, who's actually in the chat room. So if any of you want to speak out anonymously or, you know, get some advice, there is a therapist in our live chat room right now. And I asked a little bit, if there's someone, you know, like our guest Mike on the line or a family member of, you know, some younger folks that are just witnessing some behavior that they're not quite comfortable with and you want some resources out there, Valerie has put in the chat room, the domestic violence hotline is 1-800-SAFE. So 1-800-7233. Again, that's 1-800-SAFE. For whatever reason, if you can't remember that, those digits, you can always dial 211 from any city and be linked to resources. I think, you know, what my question to Valerie was, for a person like our first caller, you know, whether you're in the thick of the situation or, like Mike is, out of the situation, that relationship is behind him, but he has the rest of his life to live and doesn't, you know, obviously want to experience that or have his wife experience that level of anger, there are some resources that are available to people who have been the aggressors in a domestic violence situation. So, again, the number is 1-800-SAFE. And also you can take a look at the domestic violence website, www.thehotline.org.
Yeah, and since we're throwing out numbers and all that, you know, if you want to share your story or if you want to ask any questions of us, of Mike, or in the future later on, our guest lawyer or therapist, you can call at 323-657-1479. And if you already are on the line, just dial 1, the number 1, to speak to us, and we'll patch you right in. Again, that's 323-657-1479. Dial 1 and you will be in the queue. Right. Oh, yeah, and also if you have any organizations that you represent, definitely you can put that in the chat room. Also, you can give us a call. I have folks hitting me on a text message and hitting me on Facebook with petitions and, you know, different stories. Definitely, you know, call up, feel free, chat room, and, you know, get out there. So,
One more thing, Vic, I'm sorry. Just be sure that if you are using any of these resources that we are giving you guys tonight, you clear your history on your computer, you clear the call log on your phone, because abusers tend to have very controlling behaviors and will, you know, sometimes look after, you know, what resources and people you've been in contact with. And just as part of your safety plan is, you know, reaching out very carefully and being sure that you're using a lot of caution when you're reaching out to some of these different organizations. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about
you
that.
Definitely
Vic.
Do that work or something like that. No, you know, that's very important. You do it at work or, you know, somebody's house. Don't do it at home. So, they should be watching. Well, we have our legal correspondent / expert on the line. We have Michelle Williams, attorney at large, and her specialty is family law. Dr. Michelle, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Is it family law? How do you say that?
It's family law.
Ooh. Family law. Okay, I got it right. That's pretty simple too. You've been listening. Do some of these cases sound familiar?
Well, the one regarding the teenage domestic violence, that is actually more common than people think. So that tends to come up more often. And also the first caller, I forgot his name, but the one that shared his story about how drug use contributed to the domestic violence issues. That one, that I actually see a lot in my practice because I primarily deal with child protective issues where there are children involved in domestic violence situations. So we generally see that a lot of times the domestic violence is not the only issue in the home. So there's usually drug use, alcohol abuse, things like that going on as well.
So why do you think that it happens so much with teenagers? Why do you see that often?
The thing with teenagers is that a lot of them, I mean, I'm not an expert on domestic violence, but from just generally speaking, a lot of teenagers, they don't seem to understand that some of the things that are happening to them are domestic violence, that they are being, you know, that they are in that type of relationship. A lot of them probably think, you know, oh, that's just how he plays, or that's how she plays, you know, they're fun, or, you know, even, it doesn't even have to go as far as hitting. A lot of them, you know, just in the way that they interact with each other, speaking to each other.
So, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question from the, thank you. I had a question from the legal perspective of domestic violence. I know that, you know, many folks that are in domestic violence relationships have a lot of concerns about how seeking help or leaving is going to affect their family. You know, what if someone doesn't believe them? What if they are forced to give up their children? Just a number of things that are very frightening when you're already going through a very traumatic experience as it is. But from the legal perspective, is there anything that, like, parents of children can do to start to kind of create some type of log or something to kind of protect themselves, their families, protect themselves in their housing situation? A lot of women say, you know, where would I go? I would lose everything. Is there anything from a legal perspective that protects folks that are being abused from, you know, losing their family, their children, their possessions in this process?
Definitely. In terms of lose of, let's say, in the average or the more common domestic violence situation where you have a woman being abused or she's the victim in the situation, the law is generally that if there are children involved, especially, the parent who's being abused cannot be charged or they can't be held accountable for being in that situation, basically. So you can't just go in and say, okay, mom, you were here, you were getting abused, and because you didn't do anything, now we're going to take your children away from you. There's actually a very specific case that directly says that that is unconstitutional. So there are, so the best thing that a parent can do if you're in a situation where you are being abused and you have children in your care, the best thing to do is to seek outside resources. I mean, if you can't, you know, put a plan, you know, put together a plan yourself, you don't have any family or other resources to go to, then the best thing to do would be to contact, you know, some type of child protective agency, you know, to get them involved to make sure that they can help you get in contact with places that, you know, shelters, specific domestic violence shelters or programs or things like that.
Right. Now, and I know we promised our listeners that we were going to give a really good, you know, do our very best to give a different perspective than the more common cases that, you know, we're used to hearing. And one of those things Vicki and I had the opportunity to talk about was the domestic violence being kind of thrown around, I don't want to say loosely, but, you know, people being wrongly accused or cases and charges not having any merit to them. Is this something that you see in practicing family law where maybe the woman, for example, just going back to that common situation where the woman is using the system against her partner because we are so so used to hearing stories of the male being a batterer and, you know, that type of thing?
Right. There, I mean, it's not as common, and one of the problems is that, you know, domestic violence doesn't always have to be, you know, the typical Lifetime story where there's a woman with a black eye, you know, and in the house, and she has someone that's, you know, abusing her all the time. A lot of times there's, it's less subtle, you know, it's more subtle where it's like verbal abuse or emotional. So a lot of times the courts don't really have anything to go off of except for, you know, the person, each party's word. So it's kind of like a he said, she said, and they kind of have to just take the facts as they are, as little as they may be, and make a decision. So there is room for people to actually take that and run with it and come up with, you know, either exaggerate their stories or make up stories completely in order to, you know, get custody or get more visitation or, right. you know, or just generally make a situation bad for, you know, in the common example, a man, the father in the picture. So it's kind of hard to say how often that happens, but like I said, you know, it's not always the black eye, but, you know, it does happen because it does seem as though, you know, sometimes that's the only way a person, that's the only leverage a person has sometimes.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Michelle. Do you have any questions for Michelle?
No, I just want to clarify something in the chat room that, you know, Michelle mentioned, and Michelle, please correct me if I'm wrong, that there are some protections in place for an abuser if they leave and they have children and, you know, they don't have to fear losing their children to, you know, say the system because they were in a domestic violence situation.
Right.
There are some systems in place. Okay.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, established case law, and it's an established, I guess, ideal in the courts that if you are the victim of domestic violence and, you know, that's really all there is, you're just the person that's being hit or emotionally abused, whatever it is, that alone cannot be the reason why your children can be removed from you. So people who are in that situation shouldn't think that that's one reason why they can't come forward, because there are definitely laws in place to protect their rights.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Michelle. Can you hang out with us a couple more minutes?
Sure.
Thank you. And we have area code 352 on the line. Welcome.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Hello, this is Bubba from the Backwoods. God bless you all listening on the Red Radio Show.
Hi, Bubba. Thanks for dialing in.
Oh, dialing in. God almighty. I can dial in. God almighty.
Bubba, do you have something to share to tonight's show?
Oh, yes. I can share a lot on the man's side of things, but probably you would want me to share that with you, would you?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. Help me out on this domestic violence where these women, don't take it wrong, probably got help someplace, and they're all being helped by somebody. But in the meantime, what happens to the poor guys out there that aren't doing anything wrong? Let's just say, like, hypothetically, that they didn't beat somebody up or kill them or choke them or pour kerosene on them or do whatever. And the law shows up and you got a ball and a dick is what I'm thinking. When they show up and they're going to say there that the whole time, oh, excuse me, ma'am, oh, we'll protect you, oh, everything's okay. Well, he goes back home and beats his wife too. That's the thing I'm thinking about. How about the guy that doesn't get a good presidency out of this domestic violence bullshit?
So, Bob, have you been a victim before of domestic violence?
I was a victim. You damn right I was a victim. Go to money. Come on. Listen to this feller. He's down at Crystal picking up some hamburgers. I don't know, but here's what I'm saying. If you're not hurting somebody and you love them and you care about them, in the meantime, somebody calls the law, 911, and all of a sudden you show up with a dick and a pair of balls, watch out. You're going to jail. Think about it.
Well, you raise, that is a very good point you raise. I know historically that has been the case where the cops come out and regardless of, you know, who struck who first, was he defending himself or not, that men have taken the bad rap and have, you know, received legal consequences. So you raise a good point, and I think a part of our show tonight. I think a part of our show tonight is raising awareness that it happens
legal
from both ends.
I lost contact with a woman who wants to be with me. This is the point. And I lost my whole place that I owned and I care about. I own the place that she's in, and I'm not allowed there. Think about that. Then I get a no contact order from the court. Think about it, that she didn't put on there. It's all a contingency on a bond. So when I bond out of jail with my brothers and my sisters and my friends, I can't go back to the place I'm supposed to be at. Think about it. In the meantime, we'll let the state's attorney's office figure that out, and none of them I'm fucking or being with. Think about it. When I can't go back to the girl that wants to be with me. So here's my point. Yeah, I think they need to find out and set a different presidency on domestic violence and make sure that someone's choking somebody, killing them, or doing something. Because if they don't do that, it leaves the poor fella out who didn't do nothing on a self-divorce thing, on a self-initiated domestic violence thing, injunction, whatever.
All right. Well, thank you, Bob. Thank you for calling. Michelle.
Yes.
Yeah, well, Bob, it was hard to get it out, but Bob, did Bob have a point? You know, you working on behalf of the law. Is the law more sensitive of women in this situation? Or do you feel men get a fair shake?
No. Personally, I think that because more women are the ones that usually come forward and bring up domestic violence claims or issues, maybe the law is more used to hearing it from a woman's side, so they tend to give a little bit more weight to when a woman makes those types of claims. But in general, it's relatively easy to get an order of protection or a restraining order against someone initially. You know, to keep it going, then usually that's when hearings and other things come into place. But unfortunately, you know, it seems as though, you know, more women do come forward, whether they have legitimate claims or not, and seek the court's, you know, intervention and getting those type of orders against men.
Okay. Well, thanks. Now on the line we have investigative journalist Philip W. Cook. Mr. Cook is the author of Abused Men, The Hidden Side of Domestic Violence. You've seen him in a few places. You know, you've seen him on radio and TV, on MSNBC, Fox TV, The Cry Report, The Rally Show, Sally, The Montel Williams Show, and now he is here with us on the Emotion Picture. Philip, are you there?
Yes, I am. What's your name?
I'm Victorious. I know you were thinking Victoria, but I'm Victorious.
Victorious? Okay.
Yes, sir. I'm the email guy.
Okay, kind of guy. All right.
Hi, Phil. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Fine. And what's your name?
I'm Jasmine. So you've been listening in.
Jasmine.
What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts?
No, I haven't been listening in. I've just now called in.
Oh, okay. Well, you share some interesting points in your book, so do tell us about this hidden side of domestic violence.
Well, it's something I just sort of looked at research in the area and found that really some things are very quite clear from the very beginning of our modern interest in this particular issue. It started with Aaron Pizzi, who opened the world's first shelter for battered women, sort of pennies and prayers, and wrote the first book about the subject, Scream Quietly or the Neighbors, so the Neighbors Won't Hear. And her views basically have stayed the same over the years in how we should approach the particular issue and those involved and help victims and deal with perpetrators. Unfortunately, those views have not really been implemented in terms of policy. So that's basically, in the way, a lot of things have changed for the better. Violence against women certainly has decreased. We can prove that with figures. Certainly there's a much greater awareness about the issue than there was 30 years ago. But we're still not listening to the social scientist, and nor are we listening very well to law enforcement. So,
now, when you say we're not listening to law enforcement and social scientists, what do you mean by that?
Well, we're not implementing their suggestions on what should be done, basically. We're not listening to them, the policymakers, legislators, and so on, have not listened to what they have to say.
Okay. And what is it that you have to say? Like,
one, we need to have evidence-based results. In other words, programs that work instead of programs that don't work. We need to know, you know, what those are, and then apply the best solution to the particular issue at hand. Let me give you an example. In every county in the United States, there are of any size, sometimes the smaller counties have to combine to put on the programs, but they have better intervention programs. And what that means is if you're the first time a person convicted of a domestic violence, not convicted, but arrested for domestic violence, guilty or not, you got a choice, having a trial, plead not guilty and have a trial, or go into a battery intervention program, or BIP for short, and for 26 weeks, once a week, up to 56 weeks, then you have put on probation for 5 years, and if there's not another arrest, then your record is clear. So given that choice, most people choose class jail. Guilty or not, right? So, sounds pretty good for everybody. The jails are overcrowded. These are first-time offenders. And if you could change their behavior in some way so that they're less likely to, you know, reoffend, that sounds good. So it all sounds pretty good, doesn't it? I mean, it's a means and method to apply to the situation. What do you think?
Now,
The problem is, here's the problem. It doesn't work. In other words, the National Institute of Justice looked at these programs and found it makes no difference whether you have such a class or don't have such a class.
Mm-hmm.
And we've known this for a long time. In fact, it makes the victims more likely to be re-injured. and reoffended
right.
instead of the reverse, because it gives them a false sense of security that doesn't exist.
Right.
And the reason these programs don't work is because they have nothing to do with reality. They're political indoctrination, kind of thing. Because,
well,
and here's
Phil,
a quote from a state statute I can give
Phil,
you.
Phil, let me stop for a second, Phil.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I do. Sorry to cut you off. And not to get too – we just don't want to get too far off of the clinical side of things. There is, you know, that the information that you're about to share, and we'd actually like to put where our guests can find that information in the chat room. But I really, you know, I have to agree with a good portion of what Phil mentioned about the effectiveness of these batter intervention courses. And also the danger that it may place people in, because it's a very hard thing to quantify if someone is, and I'm doing quotes, cured of, you know, of domestic violence. It's sort of like the interventions for someone with a sexual deviancy. You know, you don't really know if they if those issues are under control until they're in another stressful situation. So we have to be very mindful of when, you know, we talk about someone being better, so to speak, and going through an anger management course and really what that means to a domestic violence situation. But I'm sure our clinical expert will touch base on that a little bit more. So Vic, can you pull some highlights out of what Phil just mentioned and give us the name of that book again?
Philip?
My book is Abused Men, The Hidden Side of Domestic Violence. What I'm saying, yeah, I agree with you, but the trouble is, with the programs we have now, clinicians are generally discouraged from conducting them. And they don't even want to measure whether or not, in other words, what the arrest rate really is before and after. And that's discouraged as well. So
now let me ask you, Philip, have you ever been in an abusive relationship yourself?
No, I have not. I'm a journalist.
Okay. What drove you to writing about abused men, and what have you seen studying that?
Well, it's an interesting subject that affects a large number of people, so that's why I wrote about it. And in terms of what I've seen is that there's been a sea change since the first edition came out about 12 years ago, and about 10 years or 11 years since the second edition. So there has been a change in how we might address the issue, the number of people paying attention to it, and so on. What I find ultimately is what I discovered after the first edition, though, is that we need to take a more critical look at how we address the issue and the best ways to do that.
Okay. So where can they find your book?
Amazon.com.
Okay, Amazon.com. And thank you, Phil. Any last words?
Any last words? No, you go ahead and ask me a question, and I'll be happy to answer one.
Well, let me ask you one question before we go on to our next guest. Do you feel that men, for some reason, report less than women do domestic violence, or is it the same rate?
It's the same rate.
Okay.
In other words, I know a good many. The similarities between the victims of domestic violence, gender-wise, disappear. Just change the name from Jane to Joe and vice versa. And there's not a great deal of difference at all. I don't know many women going through the situation. I know as many abused women. I've met as many abused women as I have men. And I don't know any that were shouting it from the rooftops when it was occurring. So the similarities is basically the same, from mild violence and emotional abuse to very severe. It just has a range. There's no real difference there. The difference is that men have no place to turn to. And that's the difference.
That's
no one asks the question.
Right. And thank you, Phil and Philip, Philip Cook. And like I said, you also serve on the board of Stop Abusive and Violent Environments.
Yes, and that website is saveservices.org. Saveservices.org is that website.
Okay. Well, thank you, Philip W. Cook.
Hey, thank you very much. Nice talking with you. Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
Okay, so in the chat room, we have the link to Abused Men, Hidden Domestic Violence, which can be found on Amazon.com, and there's a lot of great reviews about the content and the easy read that it is. So for those of you who are specializing in areas of domestic violence and are looking to create some evidence-based programming around domestic violence and batterers, please take a look at Mr. Cook's book, and also he shares a website, which is www.safeservices.org. Before we bring our next guest on, I just want a reminder our show has been extended just a bit, and the call-in number is 323-657-1479. And so I am good to go with introducing our next guest, who is at the door.
Well, who is she?
Tonight, we welcome back Valerie Dallas, who is a clinical social worker. She's currently serving as a contract social worker providing mental health care to children and families, and she has worked extensively with domestic violence survivors, including a hotline advocate for the statewide domestic violence hotline. So thank you, Valerie, for coming back to the show.
Thank you guys for having me on.
Our pleasure. You've been here for the past hour listening.
Yes, I sure have. And there's been so much that has been said. I don't know where to begin.
Well, let's begin with our last, not Philip, but Bob, we'll call. Bob certainly sounded a bit distressed.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that?
I can understand where his frustration is coming from, because oftentimes when you're caught up in a relationship, especially when there is some dysfunction or there's some domestic violence going on, and all of a sudden you have police intervention, you know, to try to, you know, end the situation. It wasn't like your first caller, Mike, who took responsibility, ended it, recognized that there was something going on, decided that a change had to come. There was intervention, and then oftentimes when it's disrupted, it wasn't the victim that decided, okay, I want this to end, I'm going to take a stand and I'm going to walk away, or it wasn't the abuser saying, okay, well, maybe I need to step back and maybe I need to leave this relationship and get some help for myself. It's police intervention, and you're left with a lot of questions, and you don't know how to handle the situation. You don't know what the next step is for the abuser or for the person that's been abused. So I can understand there's some frustration there, and it's kind of disheartening, but it is a policy system. Like Philip said, there's a lot of things that are, you know, questionable about policy when it comes to domestic violence and how victims and abusers are treated in the services that they are offered. So I can understand where his frustration comes from, because now, I mean, he's, you know, out of the situation, but what does he do about the behavior? What does he do about his emotions? And, you know, how do things change? How does his life, how does his perspective on the situation begin to change? So. And I would suggest that, you know, we put some hotline numbers out there. Those numbers aren't just for people who have, you know, been abused, but those are also for abusers as well. These hotline advocates, they're trained in resources throughout the country, and they know how to link you. So if you have questions, if you need support, and sometimes they're just there to let you vent on them for, you know, a period of time as well. And they're there to help you and link you with the resources that you need.
So,
yeah.
You mentioned Mike.
Yes.
Now, talk about Mike. What did you think when you heard Mike's case?
When I heard Mike's case, it's like Jasmine had mentioned before, Mike gave a real, when we think of domestic violence, the average person doesn't know that there's a cycle involved. But Mike, through his story, he told us exactly what that cycle is, and, Jasmine picked up on it. Things were cool, things were great, they loved each other, they dated, things were fine, and then things would escalate. For him, as the abuser, there was some suspicion, there was something that, she might be cheating on me. And this is something that, invoked his rage, and then he took that rage out on her. And then the rage is taken out, and then so let me get cool with her. I apologize. I'm sorry. We're back at it again. And it's a cycle that continues to perpetuate. Now most abusers, they do not recognize that there is the problem. Most abusers do not say, okay, well let me take a step back and maybe I shouldn't be doing this. The guilt might be there, but the action usually doesn't follow along with it.
Well, Valerie, do most victims realize there's a problem? Because sometimes, I hear from young women. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, I think a lot of victims realize that there is a problem. But a lot of victims, it's not just as easy as, like, girl, you should go. Or, for men that are involved, like, man, you should just man up and just leave that situation. There are a lot of factors that are involved. If there are children involved, okay, how can I leave, and I have these children, I want to have an intact family. Or if, you guys are dependent on each other's income, there's the economic status that's involved. If you guys are spiritually, involved in the community, you guys are involved in the church, there's the spiritual stigma that comes along with it too as well. So most oftentimes just saying, leave, get out of the situation, that's just not the easiest answer. There are so many other factors that are involved as to why women stay and as to why men stay. But I think they do recognize that there is a problem.
Well, the reason why I ask, and I'm not sure if it's a cultural thing, but I've spoken to a lot of women through the years, through more than a decade, and I say, okay, well, is this guy hitting you? No, we fight. You don't hit me, we fight. I hit him, he hits me. It's what we do. And if you tell them that they're being abused or, they're a victim, they're like, no, we fight. He doesn't just hit me. Yeah, he hit me, then we get it popped. I may hit him with a bottle. He may push me down, then I stab him in the side. So that's what I was really talking about, people who, are we outsiders? Are we wrong?
Domestic violence, is that an eye of the beholder? Like, can someone on the outside judge your relationship? Is that the case for you?
Yeah, that is the problem, that is domestic violence, because technically, what domestic violence means is, violence going on in a domestic, how the eyes of the courts look at it. I'm pretty sure our attorney on the line can give a better legal definition than I can, but it's domestic violence happening. This person resides with you. You two live together. Now, if you guys are just dating, that's dating violence. But most oftentimes, in domestic violence, there is something that, be it the woman or the man. If there's arguing that's going on, verbal arguing, and then it leads to something physical, they retaliate. There's, that distinction there between, okay, well, now this is retaliatory, violence. He said something I didn't like, so I went ahead and pushed him. Or, he pushed me and I pushed him back and we just fight. This is how we, quote, unquote, communicate, that's still dysfunction and that's still not how couples are supposed to communicate. That's still not how a relationship is supposed to, function. So there is a concern, especially, I always want to say, two people are in a relationship, especially if it's a man or a woman. Men and women do what men and women like to do, and they have children. And this is not the message that we want to show our children. This is how relationships function. And in the midst of your violence, children are oftentimes, the bystander victim. Not only are they seeing it and it's being, they're being hurt emotionally and psychologically by it, but, they're also in the line of fire in case things are being thrown, people are being thrown, physically they're in danger too as well.
Mm-hmm. Jazz, any questions? Chuck? Jazz? The retort show. I love when this happens. I don't know where Jasmine Shaw are, but I'm here.
Okay. I know Jasmine, she did want me to. Oh, go ahead.
I am here. I'm sorry. I have my mic off.
I was listening intently and I started talking, but I did have a question. You know, there seem to be a few things going on. I'm kind of in the chat room on our Facebook page and our email, and there seemed to be like a surge of energy around this teen violence. And I know that, you know, most of our listeners are closer in our age, but we're starting to have, we have children and nieces and nephews that are entering those teen years or are currently in their teenage years. So I thought if you could talk a little bit about teen violence and the gentleman, I think his name was Hoff, that called in and shared that, you know, really horrific story about the young lady that lost her life to a young boyfriend. And again, they weren't living together or married. So if you could share a little bit about that, Valerie, I think that would be important.
Yes. When we think of teens, and sadly enough, when we think about most adults, and if you could think about, you know, some of your friends or family members, they're pretty inexperienced when it comes to dating. This is something that is completely new to them. They don't, a lot of them, unless they've had a really good relationship that was modeled to them, they don't know what dating entails. So I think as, you know, peers, as, you know, older people, as aunts, uncles, parents, it's our job to teach our children what a healthy relationship looks like, what it should feel like, and how you should be respected in that relationship. When having this conversation with your child, I think a lot of it boils down to knowing that jealousy in a relationship is a problem, and how the partner acts upon those thoughts or those concerns of jealousy. If there's any controlling behavior, if there's any pushing or shoving, if it even gets to, you know, that point physically, if there's any verbal, you know, being verbally degraded, and this goes for girls as well as boys, because, you know, what I know with a lot of my teenage clients, they think that, you know, oh yeah, I hit him, I smacked him. That is not appropriate, you know, that is not okay. And for, and a lot of times for the guys, you know, that I'm dealing with on the opposite end, those teenage boys, they take it because, oh yeah, that's what she does, you know, that's what she does, it's just fine, you know, it's not a problem. But this is not the type of behavior that we want to carry, you know, through adolescence into early adulthood, thinking it what is acceptable behavior. So giving our children, you know, an idea of foundation as to what's appropriate in a relationship, and, you know, what to do if you notice these red flags popping up, is also something very important that we need to do, and not to be silent about it, not to say, oh yeah, they're just being kids, oh, that's what they do, you know, that's what these young kids do in these days. And it also, you know, in terms of, you know, they're a lot more sophisticated than, you know, especially what I was as a teenager. They have so much social media where they have access to texting, Facebook, Twitter. They have their own blogs, and knowing how the violence can creep into those arenas too as well. Like your previous caller called in and said that, you know, him having access to, you know, her Facebook account, and so many people saying, okay, I'm in a relationship, I was dating someone, now I'm single now. Those are cues for, you know, older family members as well. Okay, so you're dating, you're single now, what's going on, what happened with that relationship, how did that go down, how did it end? You know, when relationships have ended, how did they end? So we can know, okay, well, there be repercussions on either, you know, part. And just, you know, knowing that, but being very aware and not being silent. If you see something, if you notice something, if you're concerned, just, you know, stepping in there and having that conversation with that youth.
Let me ask you a question. Say a young man, a teenager, say 17, 18 years old, and he tells you that his girlfriend is violent towards him.
Mm-hmm.
What is your suggestion to him? You tell him to call the police, tell him to leave the situation. What do you tell him?
Well, I think it would depend upon that young man, and I think I would want to know, for starters, you know, his feelings about the violence, how frequently it's going on, and depending upon his situation, you know, I can't, you know, in working with teens and in working with, you know, adults, you know, my thing is not to say, okay, well, you need to leave right now, because the time someone, and this goes for teens and this goes for adults too as well, the time somebody decides to leave and they actually do leave the person that's abusing them, that is one of the most volatile times for that person that's being abused. So I do not know the extent of what their abuser does, but they know best. So having that conversation with the youth, or be it with the, you know, adult, and asking them to the extent of what has happened and what do you plan on doing next, because it's just not for me to shove, okay, well, you need to get out of this. I can tell you this is not safe. This is not healthy. This is not, you know, I'm pretty sure this is not what your parents want for you. This is not what I, you know, as your clinician want for you. But getting their insight to see that, you know, there is an out, and helping them plot the path to get out. And if it takes, you know, having a conversation with their partner, you know, role-playing with them how they would have that conversation, but just leaving it open and not me, or, you know, saying, okay, well, this is how you should do it, X, Y, and Z. But, you know, working with them to say, okay, well, how can we, you know, what is it that you need to do, knowing that this is not the healthiest place for you to be, and how can I help you get to some place that's healthy and happy?
Well, what if the person continuously makes excuses for their partner? Saying, well, I know this person loves me. You know, they hit me every week or so, but I don't want to leave this person. They're really a nice person. I don't want to leave.
And then we'd have to go to the definition of what is love, you know, or what is love? And what does a healthy relationship look like? Because most oftentimes people don't even know what that is. Youth don't even know what that is. Like I said, they're inexperienced in what love is. But exploring what their definition of love is, and and comparing it to the reality of what love is, and how love often, you know, love incorporates mutual respect, mutual understanding. And if you're in a relationship with someone and they're hurting you physically, psychologically, economically, you know, is this love? And knowing that you can be in a relationship with someone, you can be friendly with someone, you can be friends with someone, but do you have to be in an intimate relationship with that person?
I think,
thank you.
Yes, thank you, Valerie. There's a few more things that are going on in the chat room, and I think with having Michelle and Valerie on the line, we can kind of address some of these. We kind of got back to the concern that many women have about leaving a domestic violence relationship and potentially losing their children. And there's a few folks talking about, you know, that has been the fear about reporting the violence, or, you know, also the fact that you can lose your lifestyle. We know that we can lose our lives to domestic violence, but before you even think that far, you kind of think of where am I going to stay next? How are the children going to get to school? You know, where will we eat? And there's a lot of women that, and men really, that have ended up, you know, in homeless situations, a lot of different types of situations out of trying to leave a domestic violence situation. So I just want to say to those that are listening, those that may have those thoughts, and to the people chatting in the chat room, one of the most important things that you can do is create a safety plan. And I know Valerie touched upon this. I just want to stress it. You know, when you talk about leaving, you really want to set up a lot of things in place as quickly as you can, you know, given that you have the time to do that, that you can endure enough to put a plan in action to avoid things like your children risking your children being taken away or not having anywhere to go. And as Valerie mentioned, there are services available that help women and men create, and children as well, teens, create safety plans for leaving situations that are unhealthy. So I just, you know.
Michelle. I'm sorry. Is Michelle, you there, Michelle?
Yes. I'm here.
Can you speak to us that? You had someone in the chat room, Jasmine, said that, you know, they were abused and never called the police because they were afraid that the police would, you know, take their child. How realistic is that? And how can someone, I guess, report that and keep their child? What goes into all that?
The basic idea is that the, you know, no person that's a victim of domestic violence can have their children taken away from them solely because they are victims of domestic violence. That's, you know, as I said before, an established principle in child protective law, that, you know, it's recognized that when you're a victim of domestic violence, you don't have either the resources or the ability to leave the situation sometimes. So, you know, at times there are, you know, just because of the common example, women in the situation where they, you know, they're being beaten in front of their children and, you know, there's nothing they can do about it because they just, like, again, don't have the resources or the ability to leave. But, you know, the courts have recognized that that is not something that should be held against them. You know, there's something that should be held against the abuser, and they should be held accountable for subjecting their children to seeing them exert that type of, you know, physical abuse on the other parent. So, you know, the best thing that a parent in that situation can do is to reach out to social services, you know, to, like Jasmine said, so they can help them set up a safety plan. I mean, it doesn't mean that they have to leave right away. You know, they can help, you know, find a shelter or, you know, put a plan in place for them to leave, you know, offer them services and any kind of assistance that they can before, you know, they do decide to leave. And if they do leave, again, they can help them get into a shelter and things like that. But, you know, that's something that I hope most people, anyone listening who's in that situation, can get from this. That's one thing that they shouldn't worry that that's something that can happen if, you know, they're in that type of situation.
Now, you're saying that it's against the law for a woman to lose custody solely if she is a victim of domestic violence, right? What other factors could come into play that is associated with her being abused?
Well,
someone in the chat room that's insisting that she, you know, that, you know, pretty much that is the case. So, I mean, are there any things, any loopholes that people find, or?
I mean, one thing is if there's, you know, I don't know if it's the right term or not. I know Valerie could probably speak to that, but mutual DV is, you know, that's one loophole, if you want to call it that. If there's, you know, basically fighting in the home where one parent, where there's, you know, not just one parent, you know, exerting, you know, physically abusing another parent and that person fighting back in self-defense or things like that, but where there's just a lot of, you know, back and forth where each person is a perpetrator of physical abuse on the other person, and that's happening, that sometimes can be something that they look at, you know, the courts will look at in deciding whether or not the children should be removed from that situation just for the safety of the children. But, you know, and of course, other outside circumstances, like if the parents are using drugs or things like that. But again, just solely where there's one parent, they're being abused, they're, you know, they're the victim, or they don't want to use that term anymore in the situation, that's not something that can happen where the children are taken away just because of that reason.
Okay, so it'd be other factors. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And I think we have our final caller. We have area code 973. Waiting patiently.
Yes, I have been waiting patiently. I've been waiting so long, I honestly forgot what I was going to say.
Well, we're talking about, you know, domestic violence and stuff like that.
Oh, no, I'm well aware of the topic. I've been listening, but like I said, I've just been waiting so long, I forgot what it was that I had to add to the subject.
Well,
I believe it was the attorney. It was the attorney who had mentioned earlier about situations with teenagers, and they don't even realize that they are being abused. And that is definitely true because I can relate from personal experience where it is definitely a cycle. Like, it will start off as verbal abuse or mental abuse or emotional abuse that builds up before things actually turn physical. And add that to the fact that I had my first child by the time I was 17. So now you're throwing into the mix what the other caller was saying about wanting to keep the family intact. But I'm just happy that I had a support system that helped me to remove myself from that situation before it got any worse. And there was something else that I wanted to add. I think that if more men were to actually come forward, you would probably find that there are more men who are being abused than there are women. Because in my studies, I've learned that some of the most violent relationships are lesbian relationships. So if there's violence going on between the two women, then it's kind of safe to assume that you have a lot of situations where the women are abusing the men, and it's sad that they don't have, you know, they don't have a support system, because it's looked at as, it's, you know, like the other caller said, oh, just man up, just leave, or, you know, she's a woman, what do you, you know, just handle that. So.
Yeah, I remember speaking to someone. Well, I'm sorry, I wanted to add on to what you're saying. I spoke to someone a couple of days ago about the show and told them that we'll be having the respective of men who've been abused, and she said that was hilarious. She said, what are you talking about? It doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, no, that's real talk. And this is a person who has been in several violent relationships. She's been the victim in most of them. She's also, like, you know, she stabbed someone before, you know, a man, you know, that she was with before, been in fights. But when mentioning that, you know, men are victims also, that she literally bust out laughing, you know. So I think that what you're saying is right, that it makes a man feel, you know, less masculine probably. People have it twisted. Like, there definitely is most of the time where a man is physically stronger than a woman, you know, most of the time. But a lot of times a woman will use a weapon to equalize, you know.
Exactly.
Herself. You know, she'll use knives or pots and pans and grits and, you know, like the, you know, and I understand about Forsythe, dude. He sounded a bit crazy. He sounded a lot crazy, you know, but if you sift through what he was saying, you know, he definitely is a person that had been deeply disturbed, you know, felt powerless. I guess he had bouts with the law where he was the victim, but he was the punished. So, yeah, it's definitely a sad case. Glad I've never been through it.
And something like that could, you know, something like the situation with the other caller, what was it, Bob? That can deter a man from wanting to come forward. So I just hope that this show and the author that you had in his book, that it can help some men out there somewhere to recognize that they're not alone. And it's not okay just because she's a woman and you're a man, and it's perceived that you're physically stronger than her, it's not okay. And they should tell.
Well, thank you. Well, for someone who forgot what the hell she was going to say, you definitely said a lot. We thank you.
That's right.
Thank you.
For
calling. And we are also, we're glad that you were able to, Matt, as you say, you know, leave the situation before it escalated. Pretty dope. Well, we extended a little bit. I said I wasn't going to, but I did. Extended a little bit, you know,
but it was
a little
worth
half
it.
An hour. Like, we lost Sean away. Yeah. We gained some friends, though. Thanks for our new callers, Huff. Crazy old Bob Forsythe, you know. We understand. Bob is, just, you know, he fucked up, man. Man, hey, if you are a Blog Talk Radio member, before you log out,
follow us, like the MySpace, Twitter, Facebook shit. Follow us so you can get updates on the show. Jazz, we're actually interviewing tomorrow for engineers, so hopefully we won't get no account dudes like Kwan and A-Boss.
Yes.
Shout out to Weatherman. Weatherman just got out of jail, I hear. Hopefully he'll call next week. And we touched on next week's show, which was when Val and yourself talked about people snooping in your email and stuff like that. But you know what? That'll be a surprise. You know what? Follow us, and you'll find out what next show is. And Twitter. Twitter is at The Emotion Pick. At The Emotion Pick. Last words, Jess?
Just put in the chat room that if you'd like more information on domestic violence and this topic and different perspectives, please go to the archives and you can listen to part one of our domestic violence show. The files can be shared, so if you have a friend or organization or something like that in honor of domestic violence that you would like to share, our work on bringing awareness to domestic violence, hit us up, let us know. We'd love to help you.
All right, and I think we're out. Those of you on the phone, just know that this is a part two of a show, so if I check the archives out to hear part one, we definitely covered a lot more topics, you know, so for those of us telling us we should have victims calling up and all that, hey, welcome to the show. And we've been doing this. We've been. But yeah, so we out.
Peace.